Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
We're back. Part two. Owen Smith.
Yeah. We're getting into just having a casual conversation. We start talking a little bit more about the politics, and I ask him some very medical-centric, healthcare-centric questions. He answers them quite well in his understanding of cannabis and medical cannabis. And it was just basically a Zoom meeting with a couple guys chatting.
Yeah, no, and obviously you're knowledgeable too, but one who has a huge deep knowledge of how we got here through the medical system and maybe where he thinks it's going. But anyway, you'll enjoy this, and we'll come out and talk about it a little bit at the other end.
Yeah, so what did you graduate from Camosun College with?
Sociology.
Oh, well, that's a good diploma to get. It doesn't get you a job, but it's good to have.
It was me sort of pursuing interests and trying to understand the world and looking at groups of people, trying to understand how people work in groups.
Yeah,
just fascinating to me.
Education, man. Yeah, I love studying people, too. In nursing, part of my job is to read people and, you know, figure out community health and how communities behave. And, segueing into the podcast, learning about cannabis in a new way. Of course, you know, I grew up in Victoria in the 70s, and cannabis was everywhere. I can remember working at a place in the Hillside Mall. And there used to be an ice cream joint there. I used to get ice cream. And I worked in Little Harry's, it was called. And I can remember, you know, you'd be scooping ice cream, you look up and you can smell the cannabis as guys are walking through the mall, you know, boldly smoking a reefer, you know, and it's sort of like that. So that's my influence. So coming out to the prairies later in life as a career, and then, you know, medical cannabis becomes a reality. And it's like, gee whiz, here I am a nurse. Why aren't we using medical cannabis? What are you talking about, Kirk? Well, okay. You know, so the medical field doesn't even respond in the early aughts. And then all of a sudden there's recreational cannabis. And now everybody is aware of cannabis. But I think what's happening is that the medical side of cannabis is even losing the momentum that it had. What do you think? Do you think I'm on the right track with that?
Well, I definitely saw medical excluded from when they introduced all new legislations it's not common that we have so much taxes on us, so much have to go through to get medicine in Canada, and not having storefront access to this for medicine, like they granted it for everybody else, but, you know, you'd think that medical patients would get that extra consideration, but it didn't get anything at that time. So yeah, definitely left behind was the feeling, the sense that Health Canada doesn't really like to manage this large system that there are municipalities and provinces and other different places where the cannabis grow the system that Health Canada manages is not really that welcome. But this is a federal program. These people are allowed to and must be allowed to grow there. And, you know, that these were rights that were established in court. So they high standard. Whether or not the politicians at this point really understand them, if they're thinking about removing them,
Well, you know, you were saying in the first interview about the review. You know, the Cannabis Act is up for review. I also participated in it, and I was quite surprised and happy that it was all long form, that it wasn't multiple choice. So I got to the point where, and it's the final few questions where they say, what do you think about the current medical system? Should it not just go through the dispensaries that are already there? And it was artfully written because it really The answer is yes, but what you're saying is that medical people will get the cannabis from recreational stores, is what they're saying, what I read into it. Did you read that as well, that part? Because there it.
Yeah, essentially, do we need it at all, or can they really be served by the recreational program?
What do you think the risks of that is?
Well, I think there's benefit potentially to some of the retailers who are struggling. I think they would like to have that business, but medical patients, they need a little bit more than recreational. I mentioned a little bit about the U-Tender service, which has a person like myself who would talk to you and discuss your progress.
So you're providing a medical cannabis service through the internet, like similar to the services you guys are giving at the Victoria Buyers Club?
Similar. Like the Victoria Cannabis Buyers Club is a great example of somewhere where you could go and have somebody who will introduce you to cannabis through an orientation. If your medical intent is medical, it's not necessary that you just sort of, you know, get the same service as a recreational consumer. You don't want to necessarily have the same products. You need to be oriented towards the products that are going to suit your issues. You know, that's really important. And in some cases, people with a medical condition need to be warned to have a heart condition, things like this. People have questions, and having somebody there to answer them, especially if your health is compromised, is really important psychologically. And even if it's you know, not going to be, you get your medical advice from your doctor, but you can talk about cannabis and have somebody who can hold your hand, talk about cannabis products. Have, like in the VCBC, you got an array of different products, from multiple different kinds of capsules to all kinds of different skin products. There's lots of questions to be asked about.
Yeah,
about those, and it's the care and the community aspect that comes in more when it's not just about the bottom line. It's not just about making money, moving people along. If it's only going to be a small purchase. You know, there are places in the world where you've got, I understand, two lines, where one can be medical and one can be a recreational line, and they have slightly different services, and they could even have different prices.
That's the Colorado model.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when I was in Colorado, I did an episode from down there prior to recreational legalization in Canada, and you walked into the shop and the right side was recreation and the left side was medical, and on the medical side there was tax exemptions, information, different different products that were grown for different reasons. It was a whole different side, but in the same shop. That was an ideal system, but our current recreational system doesn't provide for that now. And I think governments are ignorant enough to believe that medical people will get the services from the recreational centers.
But it's kind of contrary, again, to the government's intentions or goals with the recreational system and the reasons that they introduced it, which were to have a little, it's a little bit of a training wheels system, where because you're getting people in with all kinds of intent, you want to keep the strength of the price of these things, the edibles particularly, low. You've got the intent to protect children, and you've got news stories about hospitalizations with edibles. These are things in the recreational stream which are a counter to the government's intent, and maybe not necessary there, but in the medical side of things, 100% is necessary. That's exactly where we're pointing to the need for people with chronic conditions and for people with extreme pain who have high tolerance to cannabinoids, who, you know, the ridiculous proposition of getting that from a recreational store, if you've got the money, Can you eat it that much?
So where do you think the disconnect is?
Well, it's hard to say.
I want to think the federal government has good intent with the medical side. I want to think that they see the court cases as telling them that they need to accommodate for people. I think where the disconnect is that the provinces are responsible for medical systems. The only medical system the federal government's responsible is for Indigenous peoples. They have no experience with providing medical services to Canadians other than Indigenous peoples. So I think the disconnect is that the medical systems, the colleges of doctors, the colleges of nurses, haven't had to work with medicine, cannabis as medicine. It's because it's not listed as medicine in the provinces. So that's where I think the disconnect is.
Well, in line with my experience in the court, listening to the government arguments, the Section 1 charter argument that is used to counter the Section 7 that we put forward is the government's design that they have to protect vulnerable groups. So I think inherent in their argument in holding on to potentially this federal system is that it is so that they are protecting certain groups that are considered vulnerable to cannabis. Those would be children, I think mostly at this point. I don't think you can.
Well, people with arrhythmias maybe also, you know.
Right. This is some right, the heart related things.
Right. So, but is that the federal government's responsibility or provincial governments?
Well, it
Or
might be
both?
that we're might be that we're seeing the loosening of a steely grip,
Yeah.
this 100 years, the fist of prohibition has calloused over and it doesn't just spring open.
Yeah.
It is leaking. And there are, structures that had grown during prohibition that will no longer be needed by society. And that's just kind of a slow process, potentially. We'd like to knock down the barriers, but for whatever reason, it just takes forever for governments to do things and just stall and slow and delay of thinking.
Yeah, but they're also, I wrote about this. I also think there's talking to Ted is interesting. Like I spent an afternoon with him and just chatting with his experiences and recorded it and put it out and just trying to figure out why. I mean, we've had cannabis as medicine for 22 years, 20 years. We've had federal legislation through your own activities that has basically said cannabis is medicine, but yet we've got provincial governments that are treating it like it's something to protect people from because recreational cannabis. Then we got the medical side where we've got even now the federal government in reviewing the medical cannabis, the Cannabis Act, the Recreational Act, they're trying to lump the two together and they're not. And it's I just find it. I mean, you're in it. You've gone to court. I'm observing it. I'm in the healthcare system, and it frustrates me that the healthcare system still are fighting cannabis. I don't see why.
Well, there's always been the arguments around pharmaceutical domination of our healthcare system. And, cannabis offers a replacement for lots and lots of drugs, which are supporting a lot of people and companies. And they are, I'm talking about, say, people who use those drugs and people who sell those drugs. It's sort of at this point, we're so far down the road with pharmaceuticals
Yeah.
that it's a real threat. And with cannabinoid therapies coming through, I think these companies would probably like to replace, upgrade their offerings rather than just let people have their own, plants.
Yeah.
To really support the people doing it for themselves, like what I would be doing, teaching people that it's a fairly easy plant to grow. It's nice to be around even when you're growing it. You can make it into things really easily and all sorts of things. Empowering people, you know, taking it on for themselves versus where it has more centralized, larger sources sort of controlling it and distributing it. I see the industry responding in some ways, what may be the nature of the industry to move towards smaller and medium-sized companies, with what is the biggest multi-billion dollar companies with all the advantages losing out altogether. The values dropping from $150 a share down to something like pennies on the dollar. And this just reflects to me that there is a different way to do it. That's not the traditional means that the existing corporations that we have in the world are familiar with. It's a new way. A cannabis company has to operate in alignment with their consumer base, cannabis people. And the consumer base are going to determine the kinds of companies that they want to win in the long run. So I see some necessarily reshuffling and reordering, but bringing it home more. Why not growing your own cannabis? If you're a medical patient, we've always considered it to be a therapeutic exercise to go outside and pluck some leaves. This makes lots of sense. And why not people start to do that just generally? It's good for your health, whether you want to keep a little cabinet of medicines for a particular time. You know, we have that opportunity now. I think there's more, as a community, a cannabis community, to help people learn how to grow cannabis so that they can start learning to love it on their own and then start to become sharers of it so that they can build a more social time. You know, post-pandemic is really anti-social. And we've got legal cannabis now. Post, you know, we can start getting social again. Let's be creative with it.
It is interesting that one of the most successful businesses during the pandemic were cannabis companies. But
essential services.
Yeah, I completely respect your political side of it. I should actually allow you to talk more on a personal level. Thank you for indulging me in getting into politics. On a personal level, what's happening in your world? Are you still baking?
Right now, I just launched a company called Ethical Growth Consulting. So it's a cannabis business development company with content. Building content strategies, being very creative with social media, and also looking at impact. So what is the social impact of your company and the environmental impact? Got a couple of cool people working with me. My former manager at Aurora as the corporate social responsibility manager, he's working with me. And Anne-Marie Fisher, formerly of Canorite, who is all over the content development.
I know her very well. I've interviewed her and met her in Nanaimo. Wonderful lady.
We get to meet with them every Monday, and we get to talk about what we're up to and try to forge ahead in certain projects. Right now, one of the things we're working on is for the environment is plastics packaging. In BC, there's a grant funding for plastics reuse and circular economy models. And we, with the help of Mika Unterman from Apical in Ontario, who has a box return program going on for their master pack boxes, we're going to try to do one for cannabis plastic packaging with the help, potentially, if we succeed, of the British Columbia government and some funding organizations. for the environment. So that's pretty
Nice.
exciting.
Nice.
Pretty exciting. So we can sort of get a model so that the licensed producers, if you pr produce a package, there could be a place you could just, once you've made enough of them and they've been returned by your consumers, they've been washed and prepared for you to use again. And so you don't have to buy new packaging. You can actually get it at a discount. And you can also say that you are, helping to reduce the waste in the landfill, which is the big win, right? So that's something that we're doing in the environmental angle.
That's very cool.
We're also working with some consulting with some First Nations to help the economic development of some First Nations who have been impacted hard by prohibition and really deserve to get involved with this industry and haven't really been given a lot of opportunity to get ahead. It's not really a social equity program for cannabis in Canada like there is in the United States in a lot of places. So we kind of have to try to do it ourselves until there may be something introduced. Part of this Cannabis Act review is to review the impact of the Cannabis Act on First Nations. And so, as my understanding from talking with many and listening in at Zoom calls, that they have not been consulted. They weren't given enough time to organize this. And so they also feel left behind by Canada's plan to legalize cannabis. And so, this is a really important area of focus as well, not only because of the harms that continue related to the use of opiates that could be substituted with cannabis products, that continues on, but the potential for these nations to develop economically their own cannabis businesses and have their own opportunities for success in the new global cannabis market. Because it might just be that people around the world are more interested in buying cannabis from First Nations than they are from large corporations, and that should be their choice.
That's very cool projects. Are you still involved with the Buyers Club?
Absolutely.
Are you
I'm a volunteer on the board down there.
able to update us on their legal story at the moment? Last time I left them, they were levied at an incredible fine of $6.3 million.
6.5.
Five. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Well, the hearing for this has not been called yet. The application for the exemption with Health Canada is still in motion, still in, I believe, in Health Canada's court. The developments elsewhere of the court decisions in Alberta, and recently in Saskatchewan, that speak to the issues that are in the exemption applications. They support and add support to that application. If, of course, it's not accepted, then they will support the legal application. It's just the only thing, it's just so expensive, For a small group, a nonprofit who is always trying to keep prices low as possible for the clientele, in part in competition with the prices that are dropping elsewhere because of the flooding of the market, it's harder than ever to fundraise in this post-pandemic world to raise money for these types of court cases. So I'm going to say, anybody out there who's listening, it is needed. It is necessary if you wanted to reach out to the Victoria Cannabis Buyers Club and support the ongoing, so far successful but continually important court cases that Ted Smith and the VCBC are at the helm of at this point.
Are they a registered charity? Did they get that
Nonprofit.
status? Nonprofit? Okay. so they can issue tax receipts for people who are looking to donate.
Reach out. I'm sure they'll be able to tell you all about it.
So, Kirk, couple of takeaways I had. So he's not completely against. So I think he brought up the idea first that does Health Canada really want a medical system? You know, maybe they don't. Maybe they just don't want to be involved with cannabis at all, which honestly, I can't dispute any of that. And the, you know, I think, and we've talked to lots of people who think there should be a medical system, but he brings up, you know, let's do a little devil's advocate. If there wasn't a medical system, might it be just easier for people to go to, you know, their corner cannabis store and buy their medicine? Yeah, maybe. You know, might it be a little cheaper? Maybe. But I, and you brought this up too, but you know, I think what we would lose is, well, the people I see in the pharmacy who are asking me questions, you know, the 75-year-old who hasn't used cannabis before, who's interested, but has no idea what to do next. Now, the good news is it sounds like Owen and some of his compatriots might be having a an online system to at least give some people like that some guidance, but yeah, thoughts about medical system, the review, medical cannabis versus rec, what were you thinking?
I'm thinking a lot. First of all, again, it's important. I'm trying to find more of my cannabis stories and more medical cannabis stories, because I think the medical system's at risk. Now, I'm not adverse to change, because the current system definitely needs changing. But inferring through the Cannabis Act review process, inferring that the Health Canada is considering allowing, or just moving, or however they phrased it, to use rec stores for picking up cannabis, I get it. I understand. But the problem is that the recreational marketplace is all about preventing and the harm of the vulnerable, you know, because cannabis is something to be protected from. The medical side of cannabis is educating people on how cannabis does help people with medical needs. So I think the goals are different just by definition. And having the government say that they think medical cannabis can be obtained from a recreational store for supply only, but where's the information coming from? And I mean, we interviewed Justina in the last episodes, and you know, there's a person that provides education, right? Now Owen talks about his U-tender, you know, what is U-tender? And I was on the webpage today, and U-tender is basically a bunch of people who are medical cannabis experience, who are basically making themselves available. You know, back in the day, you would phone a paging system and say, could you please page Dr. So-and-so? And the operator would dial a number and the pager on the guy's belt would go off, and Dr. So-and-so would pick up his phone and or find a phone and make a phone call. Nowadays, you got a web page where you can go in Canada, and there are, gosh, dozens. Let's see, the U-tenders 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 9, 10 rows. There are 49 people on this page that are saying, call me if you have medical concerns, is my understanding. These are people that are prepared to give you advice. So, but again, I don't see people, I mean, these are knowledgeable people, and we've talked about the cannabis industry being a new industry that people are educating themselves as they go. Justine is a perfect example. You know, she's a young lady that got into the industry, and she's now knowledgeable and she gives advice. But I still believe more healthcare professionals need to be accessible and knowledgeable and available to people that use medical cannabis.
Oh, I completely agree. And I've got to step on your toes here a little bit. But two of the things, one came from Justina. I'm going to come back to her because she made an excellent point that is one of those, of course, but I didn't think about it. But nothing against our bud tenders or our U tenders or, but even the most knowledgeable about cannabis person doesn't necessarily have the medical background to know sort of what else is going on in the patient's medical stuff. And again, just obviously self-interested, but you know, even a lot of medical professionals don't necessarily have the records of all the other medicines that they're on, like a pharmacist does. So I agree. It doesn't mean that, you know, healthcare professionals necessarily have to have the end all and be all, but it sure would make sense for healthcare professionals to be in the loop here. And the other one that Justina brought up, that it was one of these forehead slapping moments. The rec stores are set up more or less to sell high THC products because that's more or less what the rec system wants. You know, not everybody, not all the time, yada, yada. But, and a lot of people on the medicinal side want low THC products. Again, not all the time. You know, one of our big examples seem to be our Lyme disease. People seem to like high THC things. But if even the, you know, the rec and the medical are literally looking for different things of the plant, it seems like having two systems would make sense.
I've sort of said it over the last 97 episodes, 98 episodes, that the medical side is somehow forgotten. And one of the reasons why we started up this podcast was to learn more about cannabis and on the heels of the recreational system. And I really believe the recreational system is a huge mammoth industry. However, people are losing money. Whereas the medical system, it's been around longer and it's not getting the attention it deserves. This is why I originally called Owen, because I wanted to talk about medical cannabis with a guy that's been there for a few years. I mean, Ted Smith, I mean, he's been there for like since the late 90s. So these guys have been around a while in the medical field, and it's the medical field teaching the health industry about medical cannabis, and Health Canada not helping us in the process. You know, sometimes I get a little too hot, but I do it on purpose in the sense that I think we got to be more aware that people use cannabis as medicine, I think, more often than they use it as recreation. This is coming from a guy that's been using recreational cannabis for decades. I come to appreciate that it's like having a glass of beer or having a whiskey at night. You know, there's a calming effect. There's a medicinal effect to using cannabis. So Owen again, just storytelling, right? Oh, and having a conversation.
No, and we, Owen, we really appreciate all the time you gave us and just the depth of knowledge. Like, dude, you were, if not the guy, one of the guys who got us, you know, edibles and extracts and basically anything other than smoked cannabis. That was you in your court cases. Thanks. We appreciate that.
So if Neil Young's the godfather of grunge, maybe Owen Smith is the godfather of cannabis 2.0.
Sure. Works for me.
Yeah.
So, Kirk, I'm Trevor Schufeld. I'm the pharmacist.
Well, are we done?
Well, I just thought I'd throw it out a little early. I thought I would not wait to the bitter end this time.
Oh, okay. And I'm Kirk Nyquist. I'm the registered nurse. We're in for Medness, the podcast. So what's new? What have you been up to? You went to a Smoking Sensation conference?
I did, and talked to some really interesting people and learned some interesting things. And one of the people I saw there in person, which was cool, was Dr. Rob Seeley. If you remember back, we talked to him about cannabis and kids quite a while ago. Looks like we're going to get him back on to go the other end of the spectrum, and honestly, probably where his practice is more now, because he's another guy in the Victoria area. For cannabis and the elderly. He sort of caught my attention at one of the breaks saying, yeah, probably one of those popular talks I do now is green is the new gray. So I said, well, that kind of fits in really nicely with what, and we haven't done a specific sort of older person and cannabis thing yet, which is surprising because there is lots of interest out there in the, I don't know what, 70 plus age bracket. You know, it, people are interested because, you know, once you start getting a little bit older, you have a few more aches, pains, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, does your friend's CBD oil that their kid recommended for them, does that work for you? Should you try it? You know, all those questions are out there. So I thought Dr. Seeley would be a great guy to bring back.
Episode, season 3, episode 7. But did you...
Thank you.
Cannabis is for kids. Did you not also speak at the conference? Can I out you?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you didn't out me. The majority of the time we spent at this one was about not even smoking cessation, more like harm reduction, tobacco harm reduction. So if someone can't, won't, whatever, quit actual tobacco smoking, what could we do instead? And there's all sorts of interesting things to learn there, like is vaping a good option? Is heat not burn tobacco? So, you know, instead of actually burning the tobacco, if you just heat it up and just get the nicotine out, does that eliminate a lot of the harmful stuff out of cigarettes? And yes, probably it does. But we did manage to sneak in a little section towards the end of the day where I got to talk a little bit about, you know, this podcast that I keep doing. That particular room was, I think, half a dozen pharmacists and two or three physicians. And I was sort of the opening act for a Dr. Rob Seeley, who then talked about, you know, how he treats people with cannabis. And not to brag, but people kept saying at dinner that night that, you know, the most interesting segment of the day was the cannabis one, because, you know, cannabis is interesting.
So we got two more listeners. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to out myself. As you know, I'm working with Nunavut right now and doing a contract with Nunavut. Nunavut, as a territory, 74% of the people consume tobacco or smoking products. 51% of people between 16 and 21 consume tobacco. They have a huge issue in the north where hyperemesis syndrome, cannabis-induced psychosis. These are real problems happening in Nunavut. And about 2 months ago, I got hired on as their cannabis consultant. So I've been working on that. And the reason why I'm outing myself is because I sent my first invoice and they're paying me. So I guess it's official.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So I've become a cannabis consultant for Nunavut. But I'm also building a harm reduction plan. They have a piece of legislation called the Smoking Act, the Smoking Act, and Tobacco Smoking Act, pardon me, the Tobacco Smoking Act. And my job is to build them the implementation plan, how they are going to implement it. And the risks and benefits of this is, the benefits are monumental. I mean, if they can cut down the risk of chronic disease through the consumption of tobacco through harm reduction methods, bonus. But of course, the risk is that this is a multi-generational plan. That, you know, you build an act, you build a piece of legislation that everyone in Nunavut has to follow. How do you implement it, right?
How do you implement it? How do you get buy-in? How do you, and.
Well, I'm working on that right now in my basement suite in Dauphin, Manitoba, Canada. So I'm working on that, which is kind of cool. It's a cool project. If I can help people with their tobacco smoking and cut down the chronic diseases, none of it, well, I'll put that on my little resume as a retired guy. So.
Absolutely. No, good on you and good on Nunavut, and we'll hope to hear updates on that. And it kind of fits in well with sort of everything professionally you've been doing up till now.
Yeah, it kind of blends it all. Again, thanks to Owen. I never planned to make this a two-parter. He has requested reggae music, so I'm going to just carry on with the Peter Tosh. We're going to play another Peter Tosh, and to be honest, I haven't listened to Peter Tosh in a little while. I had a lot of time for Peter in the in the late 70s, early 80s. I played them a lot. So I'm gonna dance this one as we're listening to it.
And just pretend you're on what's the name of the bay in Victoria?
Oh, Arbutus Cove. Yeah.
Arbutus Cove. So yep. This is Kirk back, Arbutus Cove in Victoria. Listen to Peter Tosh. Dancing.
Yeah, and all the links for Owen will be on our webpage. So reefermed.ca, Owen's endeavors will be up there and linked. And thanks again. So cheers, mate.
Have a good evening, everybody.
And there we go, episode 98. That was another good one, guys. A couple of things to add here. The Reefer Madness podcast likes to acknowledge that we produce our shows on Treaty 2 territory and the homeland of the Métis. And we pay our respects to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this land as we reaffirm our relationships. Episode number 100 is coming up in two more episodes. That's something to look forward to. And now the song that ends off the episode, as Kirk mentioned, Peter Tosh. And the song is Glass Houses. Have a good one.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next. Talk to you later.
Send it.
Okay, so I am. Hold on, I'm still figuring out how to. I'm sure I want to stop. Yes. Well, that might end up being a thing.